Welcome, everyone, to the Jake Dunlap Show. This is your weekly dose of real success stories from entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, CEOs, and the people that you love. If you've ever wondered what makes people tick, what are the weird things that happened to them in their past that helped to shape the people that they've became? Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Eastern, you can tune in and get exactly that. The behind the scenes, not the typical behind the scenes, but the real stories that shaped some of the people that you know, love, and follow. All right. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Jake Dunlap Show. One of our last episodes rolling in to the new year, which I think is why today's topic and guest will hopefully bring a lot of value. I think more and more of us today are thinking about whatever this work-life balance integration, self-care plan that we should all have and what that means for us, obviously, around this time of the year, I think really gets brought to the forefront. So today, my friends, I want us to talk about this type of investment, not just investing in your business, but investing in ourselves. I want us to talk about how to develop that inner strength and winner mentality that, if nurtured properly, can help us achieve everything that we set our minds to. And today's guest, Roberta Hughes, is the founder at Peaceful Living. And through her platform and personalized plans and classes, she helps people unlock their ability to achieve their health and wellness goals, live without pain, reduce the amount of stress, and obtain their highest quality of life. And did I mention that she also went to Arizona State as well? Go Devils, fork 'em. So ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Ms. Roberta Hughes. Roberta, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jake. It's great to be here.
That's right. It's going to be a fun one. And I'm excited to kind of jump into we're catching up on your background a little bit. And for those of you tuning in for the first time, we always spend a little bit of time on the journey, which is where I find, you know, you find all these really interesting life lessons and things that kind of come about as we grow up and we mature. And so let's go back. So you were raised, and we were describing this. I lived in Arizona for 5 years. So I'm like, I think I know where most towns are, because Arizona is like pretty spread out. For those of you who don't know, there's only like six. And you grew up in southeastern Arizona, Sierra Vista. Family was an Army family. And so would love to hear, especially then, like, because Arizona, you know, is really blown up in the last, call it, like 15 years. But, you know, what was it like for you, you know, kind of growing up in that environment?
I am definitely a small town girl. So when I was growing up, I think Sierra Vista had 50,000 residents. And a lot of those were transient because of the Army coming and going. We had our first home built when I was in kindergarten and moved in, and I stayed in that same home all the way till the sixth grade. And behind our house, it was just this open wash where I could go and explore and play and be creative as a kid.
I love that. What are some early lessons, you know, from obviously growing up in an Army family? And again, probably having friend groups and things that kind of moved in and out, and you know, you got this opportunity to kind of explore and have your own space. What was that experience like for you? Where growing up there, you spent, again, like you said, kindergarten through going to college there. Like, what are some maybe lessons that you remember from your family?
Growing up in a small town, it's so connected from your family to the other families in your hometown, and everybody kind of knows each other, which is a blessing and a curse, especially going through middle school and high school years. Everybody knows everybody's business. But that being said, there was also this sense of helping each other. We were always doing things to support the military and soldiers going to war and returning from war. Having that experience and then also living so close to the border where we could also interact with different cultures. At that time, it was easy to take a weekend and just drive across the border and experience culture that was different than ours. So I feel like lessons learned was being able to expand the scope of the community that I was in and find out how to interact with other cultures. And the simple places of being within a family unit, you know, having dinner at the same time every day, going out to play and not being worried about something happening that could be detrimental other than you hurting yourself by falling down or...
Yeah, like breaking your arm or something, yeah.
Yeah, so just the innocence of being able to be a kid and be creative and explore.
And are there lessons, obviously, I mean, you know, we've had a lot of people from the military and also people who grew up in military families. Are there lessons, you know, when you think about as an entrepreneur and business owner now? Are there things that you look at from, you know, growing up around that Army environment that you feel, as you look back, really translated, or were kind of big things that stand out now in retrospect?
Yeah, for sure. Professionalism and how you show up really matters. And the first impression that you make on a person is going to always be there, regardless if it's good or bad. So bringing your best and bringing the best version of yourself, coming with a professional appearance, coming with professional communication, and really coming with the opportunity to listen and learn and get to know the other person and then offer ways to help. I always saw both of my parents doing that in all of the relationships that they had. And both of my parents also pursued their own hobbies outside of work. So there was that example too of turning passion into purpose while earning a living and holding all of the things that were required to maintain our home and our family.
Yeah, I think a lot of people today too, I want to dive into this idea of like professional communication in today's world in particular and what that means here in a little bit. And yeah, what did your parents get into? What were their side businesses?
So my father built his own golf clubs because golf was a passion of his, and he had this woodworking shop in our garage. He made his own clubs. I don't know if he sold them. Then he hurt his back, and once he couldn't do that anymore, he started building computers. So he bought our first computer when I was in the third grade. I was 8 years old. That was our Christmas present. And every time new technology would come out, he would upgrade, and then he learned how to build it himself. So we were always on the forefront of technology because of his passion for computers.
That's neat. Yeah, I remember those days. Like, I had an uncle that was like that. And you'd go over to his house, like, at video games, like this thing called the internet. You're like, what is this? Like, I have no clue. Like, we do not have any of this. And so you had a chance to kind of watch him do that. And, you know, as you mentioned, your mom also had a business that she was, you know, working on. How did you end up choosing ASU? You know, obviously, it's not too far away. But like, what was the decision making like for you to say, okay, you know, I enjoy it here. I've got a great family unit. Like, what was the decision like for you to, you know, where to go to college?
I was going to be the first person in my family to go to a four-year university. So my older sister had graduated and chose to go to community college. And I always had the ambition to go to a university. And at that time, being from a small town, most of my friends and peers went to the U of A because the U of A was only an hour away. And Phoenix was 3 hours away. So I kind of set my sights a little bigger, thinking that I would expand that boundary and go further away from home. And that was how I made the choice. Then I received a scholarship. So I got the Maroon and Gold scholarship for my freshman year at Arizona State. And that sealed the deal for me.
Yeah, there you go. I got my MBA there later, and great school. I still have a lot of my best friends live there and are all Sun Devils. So sorry for all of my U of A fans out there. I know you're quietly puking to yourself with all this Sun Devil talk. And then your major, like a lot of people, like journalism, right? Journalism is obviously, for those who don't know, is a big degree at ASU, journalism communications. How did you align to that? Like, what was it about journalism, at least during the time? And I think a lot of us in college were like, oh yeah, this topic. But what was it for you that led you to like that to be your major?
I started off as a business major after taking a few business courses in high school. My idea of what business really was very rose-colored and lovely. And then I got to my first semester at Arizona State, and business was difficult and challenging, and I was not succeeding at all. I was succeeding in my writing classes and English classes, but I didn't want to be an English major. So I sought out some help through a counselor, and he showed me the College of Journalism, and I never turned back. It just was the perfect fit for me.
Yeah. And how did you, because at this point too, like, is it, when do you start to get into obviously like yoga and Pilates and these other, you know, kind of passions of yours? Or like, when did you start to again kind of think about wellness as a part of this? Because obviously you go, you're the first now member of your family to graduate, you get this degree. You know, where did health and wellness start to, you know, become such a big part of your life?
I would say that health and wellness was role modeled for me throughout my entire childhood. My parents always had us take water wherever we went. My dad always made sure I wore sunscreen every time I left the house. little things like that. We would take a bath every single day. My mother would, you know, rub lotion on our arms and our legs. So self-care was just part of how we were raised. My mother is Serbian, and in the Serbian culture, family and caring for your family is at the root of all that they do. So I always had that care from my mom. My dad was more of my knowledge-based caretaker, where my mother was more of my self-care role model. And once I moved away from home, there was that missing of, well, who's going to take care of me now? And so I just started to practice the things that my mom had done for me as a child and weaved those into my life. With yoga, I came to yoga in college as a one-credit course by accident. And once I started moving around and not being able to do anything with journalism, I started pursuing yoga more as not necessarily a career, but something that I could do as a stay-at-home mom to still feel like I was pursuing my passion in life.
You know, when did you decide to make this, I guess, like the path, right? Like, was there a point you remember? Because again, and then, you know, you're teaching at, you know, lots of different places and early on and doing well and being recognized as a top performer as well. At what point were you like, okay, this is my path? You know, was there a point that you remember, whether it's at Lifetime or maybe one of the other roles, where you realize like, this is going to be my thing?
I would say it definitely transitioned for me when I was at Lifetime Fitness managing their Pilates and yoga program. That was my first experience of seeing my profession as a profession, not just something that I did as a hobby, and helping other teachers build their classes and build the business. So at Lifetime Fitness, every piece of business is like a business within the company. So we all have our own goals to achieve and, you know, revenue projections to create and achieve. And our studio was continuously overperforming at $150,000 a month, which was, I'm sorry, $15,000 a month. So 150% of revenue. And when I started seeing that, I thought, well, gosh, this really is a business. It's not just something that you can do in your spare time. And when I left Lifetime Fitness, I took a little bit of time off to do the Healthy Me Project. And we might talk a little bit about that. But once I started pursuing my business, the skills that I learned at Lifetime Fitness on how to charge for the value of services, how to hold people accountable to the value that they're gaining from services, those really created the foundation of me being able to put it into more of a business model.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll talk a little bit about sales, and obviously Lifetime is a, you know, known for their, call it like sales processes and, you know, training people there. And you know, how, like you said, you did the Healthy Me Project, so you can talk, you know, a little bit about that. And then also just talk about, again, like, and then at what point do you say, you know, you start Peaceful Living, which is, you know, kind of grown so much over the last few years. What was it for you that you were, I guess, maybe missing with the Healthy Me Project, or you decided, you know, that this Peaceful Living and this idea of doing, you know, a mix, you know, of these different meditations and online classes, Pilates, et cetera. Like, at what point did you realize, like, this is something that you wanted to do on your own, right? Because you could have went in, I mean, with those numbers, you could have went and worked at a lot of different organizations and helping them to build or scale. Well, you know, what was it about wanting to kind of do it on your own that was so appealing?
So let me unpack that a little bit. First, I'll touch on Healthy Me. The Healthy Me Project is a nonprofit organization that I started in 2013 after working with a young woman who had Down syndrome for 2 years. During the course of that time, I helped her lose 108 pounds. And prior to meeting her, had never known or had the opportunity to work with someone with a disability. And I didn't really know what was possible, but I believed that something was possible to transition her health and wellness. That experience really is at the root of my belief that health and wellness is available to all people in all walks of life, because to see her will and desire and ability to lose that amount of weight in the course of 2 years really transformed my thinking of how most people approach health and wellness and fitness. So that that time period allowed me to help young adults with developmental disabilities with fitness and nutrition, and also to bridge the gap between the fitness industry and people with disabilities. So our goal was to bring people with disabilities into fitness centers like Lifetime Fitness, 24-Hour Fitness, Vasa Fitness. Those are the three gyms that I worked with over the course of several years. And I partnered fitness instructors and personal trainers and volunteers with people with disabilities to help them gain their health and wellness goals. So because of COVID, yeah, we weren't able to fundraise, and it's really just kind of floating right now. But I haven't given up hope that one day we'll kind of get some new energy and new life breathed into the Healthy Me Project. I still work with a couple of the athletes through Peaceful Living, and I'm able to work with them virtually in a Pilates platform every week. So that's been my way of staying connected and still keeping that piece of my life in the forefront, because I believe it's going to blossom again. Now, you asked about, like, once I saw what I was able to do at Lifetime Fitness, why not work for another company? I was a stay-at-home mom. The main reason I left Lifetime Fitness was because we did have a successful studio, and they created a model where there were five of us who were business owners of the Pilates studios who were doing really well. And they kind of created this model that held everyone to the same account so that we could expand and make better business all across the company. And with that requirement came the requirement of a 40-hour work week, where I had been doing 20 hours at the studio and then the other at home between being a mom. So I made the personal decision to leave the company and be with my kids. And that was the course of time that I was able to work with Brianna, the young woman with Down syndrome. So it was a personal choice. And I think even still, I have the belief that working for a company just isn't meant for me. I don't know why I have that belief. And so when I started Peaceful Living, again, it was a passion project, similar to my dad making his golf clubs. I just wanted to create something that could serve people and inspire people and felt good. And once I had all of this content, I realized, well, if I just keep creating content, you know, it's a selfish thing. It's kind of self-indulgent. A lot of time and effort and energy and money went into the creation of that. So I felt like the next step was to put it out there as a business and start building it.
Talk maybe about, like, the early years, right? It's been now a little over four plus years. Like, what are some of, like, the big lessons? Because obviously this is a space that there's a lot of different versions or people in different sectors of this world. What were some, I guess, big learnings? You know, you had a lot of experience in physical scaling. What were some big learnings you had in, like, you know, the first year or two, call it pre-COVID, as you were starting to get things off the ground?
So pre-COVID, the learning curve was in building a website, working with someone to do that, putting the creative behind the vision. So I had this vision in mind, and how could I bring that to life in a way that people could see it and feel it and experience it? That was my number one goal. And I wrote a blog, so spending the time writing and creating and organizing the content in a way that people could come and find it online and just look at the website and get some information. So it was more of a service to begin with. And then from there, once COVID hit, I was no longer able to teach in a studio setting. So I started teaching live stream classes on Facebook, and that was a public service. I didn't charge a penny for those the whole time we were in quarantine. And I showed up 3 days a week and had people from all over the world join in, and started to create this little community of people who had never done yoga before. And so then I started recording my audio. My son does video editing. He and I sat down and edited the audio, and then I recorded myself taking the class so that it was kind of a beautiful presentation without all of the extra noise. And that's how my on-demand library was built.
Love it. And keeping it in the family too, you know? Starting to teach him kind of the entrepreneurial bug as well, so which is great. I think it's another one of those skills that more and more when it comes to digital podcast or video that just is becoming critical here. And so how did you, again, so, you know, again, you're just doing this as like a passion project. Like, at what point were you like, okay, maybe I need to like sell stuff? You know, obviously, like I said, you came from Lifetime Fitness. I know their reputation for, you know, kind of sales programs. Talk about that journey from going from putting the classes out there, putting them on demand, helping to starting to think about, you know, building a real go-to-market and sales plan or strategy.
I became very intentional about building the sales portion just this year. So 2022, I looked at my book of work and I thought, okay, this is a hobby or it could be a business. And I really feel like I have quality content that can help people in many different ways. People who have back pain, who can't sleep, who are trying to manage stress. Those kind of are my top three members. And I think at first it was kind of a build it and pray they'll come.
I think a lot of people have that early on. They're like, but the content is so good. They'll just find it. And, you know, they'll just magically start to produce. And it's like one in, you know, 5,000 businesses that happens. But for the other, you know, 4,999, it maybe happens a little bit or it happens a little bit later.
Yeah. And so I left my comfort zone of the creative process and the teaching process and the writing process. I could stay in those three areas forevermore, but again, it wouldn't create a business model that was successful. And I guess looking back at what I had done at Lifetime, and then I started listening to people who had podcasts, who had built their own businesses and created success and started scaling. And I set an intentional goal to scale this business to be something that could sustain itself over time. And in order to do that, I need to enroll members and I need to help more people. So the helping part is my passion. It's the part that I love to do. But at the same time, I have to let people know how I can help them. I have to market myself. I have to make those sales calls. I have to find prospects. I have to network. And I've really immersed myself in that process just in these last 2 to 3 months.
And what have been some of your big learnings there, right? So obviously, I think there's a lot of different, you know, different entrepreneurs, people that are aspiring entrepreneurs, founders here that have at all different sectors that we've had on the show. You're early in this journey, this kind of monetization. So what are some of the things that you look back now a few months later and say, like, either that was really hard, like much harder than I thought, or this was a big learning that's, you know, created some type of unlock?
I think the biggest learning for me is the same way that I have systems for teaching and systems for writing and systems for the creative parts. Those systems also exist in things like sales and marketing and financials. And there are people out there who are experts and love those areas and do those jobs really well. So partnering with people who have the expertise has been my number one way to help myself learn and grow and scale, and to hold myself accountable. Just like I would ask a person to hold themselves accountable to their wellness goals, if I say I'm going to make 3 sales calls this week, I actually do it, even if I cringe at the idea of picking up the phone, and just taking those slow, small steps, working towards my bigger goal.
I love that. A discipline part you said, I think for a lot of people getting into sales is probably the piece I see where, you know, it takes someone maybe 18 to 24 months to get to where they want to be versus, you know, 6 to 12, because they've built that muscle of doing the cringe stuff on a daily, weekly basis. You know, I'm going to be reaching out to a person a day, 2 people, whatever that number is for you. And it's, you know, I equate it to in the kind of the wellness vibe of, you know, doing pull-ups. It's like, if you try to do pull-ups and you don't have calluses on your hands, like, it's really hard. But if you do pull-ups every day, and even if you just do a few, eventually you develop calluses and they become much easier. And so I think a sales call is like a callus. It's like once you start to develop the callus and you get in that rhythm of doing it, you're still a few months in, but it gets easier and easier and easier to do it, because you're just like, oh, I got to do it. It's just a part of it. And then you start to realize it's just not that bad. Because it's like, now I'm looking at my thing, I'm like, I'm not doing any pull-ups. Let's be honest here. I'm not doing pull-ups right now. And so talk a little bit about this kind of process. So not just, I mean, you have classes and things too, but this like self-care success plan. You know, again, like I said in the very beginning of the show, I think a lot of people, it's like we went through COVID, you know, we probably drank and ate too much. now people are kind of developing these new habits of kind of coming out the other side of it. And I think that this topic is, like I said, for a lot of people, as we're kind of thinking about the new year, is even more topical for people. And so, you know, I see, you know, people do goal setting, and again, maybe they even have goals around weight loss and some of these other, you know, historical things that people do. Like for you, this idea of the self-care success plan, can you just talk a little bit about that and how, like you said, the systems and processes and how you got to that point?
Yeah. So I have this belief that self-care is something you do for yourself, not to yourself. And the biggest mistake people make when they set these goals for weight loss or, you know, transitioning their body structure in some way, they set these really big expectations for themselves. And it's almost like they've set themselves up for failure. Similar to if I were to say, I'm going to make 500 calls this week. There's no way I could do that. I haven't even made one, right? And keeping that realistic expectation of, I see down the road where I want to be, but what can I start doing today that is simple, that fits into my life, and that I can be mindful about and hold myself accountable? So I help people find that motivation to create their own realistic goals. But it's up to them to hold themselves accountable. I'm there to give inspiration. I'm there to give support. I'm there to be a cheerleader. I'm there to send more ideas. So in that self-care success call, we really look at what is a person currently doing, what's working well, and then where are the places they would like to see things change. If it's a weight loss goal, then maybe we start looking at what kind of movement they have in their life so far. I tend not to do a lot with nutrition because that's not my area of expertise. I can give some basic coaching and ideas, but I can also refer to nutritionists and people who focus on nutrition and wellness areas of health and wellness. So if I don't have the answer, I'm always willing to refer people to someone who does have the answer. But as I create a self-care success plan, I'm going to give you a handful of things that are really workable in your schedule and in your life. And if you can't see where they can fit into your schedule, I help with that part as well.
What are the things that you see, the people that stick with it, right? So, you know, obviously you talk about nutrition is obviously a component. When you think about this idea of self, because again, I think it's so easy in today's, especially, you know, your kids and work and all these other things. But what are some of the key ways? You know, you talked about kind of the small things and not trying to boil the ocean and you know, go from 0 to 100. You know, are there one or two areas that you usually pinpoint, like, hey, if people do X or Y, and again, maybe it's fitting it into your day to day, because I'm sure a lot of people out there, most people I know, are trying to find more time for self-care in today's world. So like, are there some habits that you can share that you've seen people like be consistent around, the people that actually continue down that path?
The people who end up continuing are those who have a purpose as to why they're doing what they're doing, rather than just a goal. Like, I want to lose 20 pounds versus I want to feel stronger so that I can be with my kids, or, you know, be on the floor with my grandchildren one day, or feel more control in the job that I'm doing and not always feel in pain, or I want to sleep better so I can perform better and hit the goals that I've set for my own business. I work with quite a few high-performing overachievers, and they tend to be very successful in achieving things. And when I can show them that self-care also fits into that place of achievement, that it's not taking time out of what you're focused on, it's actually fuel for what you're focused on, then they start to practice. Taking little mindful moments throughout the day is the number one thing that most people are able to fit in. And I call these Zen breaks. They're anywhere from 2 minutes to 5 minutes. And it's a way to complete one thing and transition to the next. So if you're someone who's sitting at your desk all day, working project to project, Zoom call to Zoom call, step number one is to say to someone, let's put some white space between those appointments, even if it's just 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
And look, I just pulled up my calendar. I'm like, God, that sounds great, right? Just like creating that two to four minutes. I know people that do that and they swear by it too.
Once you can find that, it's almost like a little puzzle. Then you can start plugging it into more spaces. And then maybe over time, you stretch your 2 to 4 minutes to a 15-minute time for yourself so that you have those longer periods. Doing simple things like getting away from your computer for lunch, getting outside for a walk, and taking a Zen break. Those are the top three things that people can seamlessly and easily weave into their day.
For a lot of people that are listening to this now, it's like, yeah, I want that. Sounds great. I do that. Maybe I have something. And then, you know, we say life happens, but it's, you know, somewhat of an excuse or a cop out, but life does happen. But how do you kind of create the mindset? You know, like how do you see people shift that mindset to say, you know what, like, you know, you mentioned before, this 5 minutes helps me to run faster at this other 50 minutes. You know, like how do you help someone or whenever people say that to you, like, 5 minutes, what's that going to do? Like, you know, how do you help people with that?
I don't tend to have people contest about the 5 minutes as much as they think they come in with the myth that they need big amounts of time. And so once I say, just try this one video, plug it into your schedule, 2 times this week, and then let me know how it goes. And then once they feel it and experience it, there really isn't an objection because they do feel better. They do feel the value of taking that time and just refocusing and resetting. I had one of my members reach out to me this week, and I had sent her a guided meditation, and she's been listening to that every single night before bed. And she's planning for this event. So she's been going full steam. But before bed was when she could fit it in. And she said, this is making such a huge difference in my energy and how I'm feeling. And over the weekend, where she normally would have worked through the weekend, she took time out and did that meditation because it was something familiar to her. And once you find the things that are familiar and feel good, it's really easy to return to them.
I love that. Yeah. And I think that idea of like finding like the ways to fit it into your day to day. And we'll link to a lot of this as well too in the show notes. So anyone who wants to get a hold of you and your content, you know, we'll definitely send them that way. So as we start to kind of, you know, wrap up a little bit here, what's next for you? You know, obviously you're just still at the very beginning. So what's next is still TBD, or, you know, I think you seem like a very intentional, purposeful person who has an idea, but what are some of the, whether it could just be trends that you're excited about or, you know, parts of the business, like, you know, what are you excited about for yourself, whether it's yourself personally or the business as you look at, you know, the coming year?
So my long-term goal is for Peaceful Living to be a company that employs at least a handful of employees, including my son who does the video editing. I want us to be able to have healthcare and take care of employees and create a culture that shows that a company can invest in the health and wellness of their employees from day one and grow into a place of being successful. I also want to start doing more leadership training and leadership retreats. That's one of my goals for the new year. I did a couple this year and just really got the bug for those. And I've written a training called Authenticity in Leadership for the Leadership Project, and we will be launching that in 2023. So I'll have the opportunity to lead some trainings. And eventually I'd like to take the stage and speak and motivate and share my experiences and help people bring more peaceful moments into their lives.
That's awesome. Well, I love all of that. And like I said, we'll link to some of this so people can follow along and see what you're up to along on the journey as well too. So I really enjoyed this. I think, like, again, I think this is a very timely topic for a lot of people. And I hope that by kind of hearing your path and, you know, again, how you're kind of creating your business and how you're being intentional about your business, that there's a million different ways that the people grow and scale companies and a million different ways that you can get there around your passion or your area of expertise or the combination of both, hopefully. And I think, you know, looking at kind of your journey, you know, you're kind of creating the business that you want and creating the business that fits your goals. For so many people, either creating something that kind of gets away from them, or, you know, like you mentioned, going and working for somebody else for so long and realizing, like, oh my gosh, this is not it. And so hopefully people can kind of listen and hear your path and realize that there's an opportunity for them no matter what the industry is that they're passionate about or interested in. So I really, really appreciate you joining me and sharing with the audience. We will see all of you next week on the Jake Dunlap Show. Thank you everyone again for listening to another episode. If you are listening all the way to the end, I hope you have left a review. I hope that you make sure that you're following or subscribing on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. We'll be back next Thursday. And again, make sure to check out the Monday episodes as well too. A lot of people are really enjoying these kind of mini episode Mondays. So make sure to tune in, subscribe, and leave a review.